Getting Started with Exodus by Lauren Stauffer and Ted Hildebrandt. Introduction to Exodus. Exodus, the second book in the Torah, begins where Genesis ended, with the children of Israel living in Egypt. The original Hebrew title of the book, quote, "And these are the names," end quote, is taken from the first two words of the book in Hebrew. The title, quote, "Exodus," end quote, "the way out," is taken from the Greek Septuagint, or LXX, explicating the content of the book as being about the way out of Egypt. By the beginning of Exodus, the 12 brothers who settled in Egypt to escape from famine in Canaan had become a nation, suffering in slavery at the hands of the Pharaoh. Exodus tells the story of God's deliverance of his chosen people from bondage in Egypt, the journey of the Israelites from Egypt to Sinai, the giving of the law to Moses, and the dwelling of God's presence with his people in the tabernacle, laying the historical, redemptive, and ethical legal foundation for the nation of Israel. The Book of Exodus. Content. The Book of Exodus opens with the children of Israel in bondage in Egypt. Pharaoh attempts to control the Israelite population by enslaving them, chapter 1, verses 10 and following, by having midwives kill the baby boys at birth, chapter 1, verse 16 and following, and finally by throwing the baby boys into the Nile, chapter 1, verse 22. Moses is born to a Levite family. His mother hides him for 3 months before placing him in a basket in the Nile River, where Pharaoh's daughter finds Moses and adopts him, chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. Moses grows up in Pharaoh's household, but he flees from Egypt after killing an Egyptian taskmaster who had been beating a Hebrew. He settles in Sinai with the Midianites and lives as a shepherd, chapter 2, verses 11 through 16. While tending the flocks of his father-in-law Jethro, Moses sees a burning bush and receives his call from the angel of the Lord to return to Egypt and deliver the Israelites from bondage, chapter 3. The divine being in the bush identifies himself by the title, quote, "I am that I am," end quote, which gives us the etymology of God's most sacred name, Yahweh, or Jehovah, as older English texts rendered it. Along with his brother Aaron, Moses confronts Pharaoh and demands that Pharaoh release the Israelites. God uses the 10 plagues to force Pharaoh to release the Israelites, showing himself to be Yahweh, the covenant-keeping God, chapter 7, verse 5, 17, chapter 8, verse 22, while emphasizing his supremacy over the gods of Egypt, chapter 12, verse 12. After the first Passover and the death of the firstborn of Egypt, Pharaoh begrudgingly agrees to release the Israelites who leave Egypt under the leadership of Moses. The Israelites escape Pharaoh's pursuit, crossing the Reed Sea on dry ground, chapter 14. Pharaoh's chariots are destroyed by the same sea that provided deliverance for the Israelites. Israel and Miriam sing songs of victory in honor of the divine warrior Yahweh, chapter 15. As they journey through the wilderness of Sinai, God provides manna and quail for the people to eat, chapter 16, and water from a rock for them to drink, chapter 17. 3 months after leaving Egypt, the Israelites arrive at Mount Sinai. God's presence descends to the top of the mountain, chapter 19, verse 20, and Moses ascends the mountain to receive the law and instructions for building the tabernacle, chapters 20 through 31, and chapter 34, verses 4 through 28. However, while Moses is on the mountain, the people ask Aaron to make gods for them, chapter 32, verse 1. Aaron fashions a golden calf, and the people sacrifice to the idol, provoking God's anger to the point that God decides to wipe them out. Chapter 32, verse 10. Moses persuades God to relent. Chapter 32, verse 14. And the Israelites proceed to construct the tabernacle, complete with its altars, laver, and ark, according to the instructions Moses received, so that God may, quote, dwell among them, end quote. Chapter 25, verse 8. The glory cloud of God's presence came down on the newly constructed tent of meeting or tabernacle. The text ends with the consecration of the tabernacle leading up to the need for instructions on how to carry out the various rituals that would be performed in that holy environment. Leviticus provides those instructions that would be required for the maintenance of Israel as a theocratic nation in the presence of a holy God. There is then the tabernacle schematic drawn out on the page here. The tabernacle structure is 150 feet long, or 50 yards long, and 75 feet wide, with the outer curtain courtyard. The inner structure, or the tent itself, is 45 feet long and 15 feet wide. In the outer court, when you enter from the east, is the altar of burnt offering, where the people would bring their sacrifices to the entrance of the tabernacle, and the priests would then take the various parts and blood to the altar of burnt offering. There was a laver right next to the altar, and that's where the priests would wash up with water. Inside the tabernacle itself, there's the holy place and the Holy of Holies. The holy place, or the outer area of the tent, contained the bread of the presence table on which the 12 loaves that represented the 12 tribes of bread were placed on this table. There's a lampstand, or a menorah, so that the priests would have light inside the tabernacle, and an incense altar with God describing in detail how to offer up and what types of incense could be offered. There was a veil or a curtain about 15 feet from the backside of the tabernacle, and a 15-foot by 15-foot by 15-foot area, square area, for the Ark of the Covenant. On top of the Ark of the Covenant were the cherubim with wings touching, and underneath the wings of the cherubim was the mercy seat, upon which the blood from the Day of Atonement, the goat, would be taken in once a year, and the blood be placed on the mercy seat on top of the Ark of the Covenant. So basically, those are the six items in the tabernacle area, two on the outside, the altar of burnt offering and laver, three in the holy place, the bread of the presence table, incense altar, and lampstand or menorah, and then in the Holy of Holies, the Ark of the Covenant, upon which were the cherubim and the mercy seat on top of it, and the Ten Commandments, Aaron's budding rod, and a pot of manna inside the Ark of the Covenant. Historical concerns. The date of the Exodus. Many scholars disagree about whether the events described in the book of Exodus took place in the 15th or in the 13th century BC. Arguments for the late date of around 1260 BC include the names of the Egyptian cities mentioned in Exodus chapter 1 verse 11, the burn lines found at Lachish, Debir, and Bethel dating to about 1200. Arguments for an early date of around 1445 BC includes scriptural evidence in 1 Kings 6:1 and Judges chapter 11 verse 26, and archaeological evidence provided by the Merneptah Stele and the Amarna letters, all of which seem to indicate that the Israelites arrived in the land long before the time suggested by the late date theory. Location of the Reed Sea. The crossing of the sea in Exodus 14 also presents some historical difficulties. The Hebrew text of Exodus chapter 13, verse 18 actually reads, quote, Sea of Reeds, end quote, not, quote, Red Sea, end quote. In light of this fact, there are several possible locations for the sea crossing. One option suggests that the crossing occurred in the region of Lake Timsa, or the Bitter Lakes, east of the Nile River and north of the Gulf of Suez. Since these freshwater lakes would have had more surrounding plant life, hence, quote, Reed Sea, end quote, than would the salty Red Sea. Another possible location for the crossing is at the north end of the Gulf of Suez, the northwestern extension of the Red Sea, which borders the Sinai Peninsula on its western side. Likewise, there are more than 6 geographically divergent sites that have been identified as possibilities for the location of Mount Sinai. Key theological themes: divine self-disclosure. God's revelation of his character takes on new meaning in Exodus. The name Yahweh, translated Lord in most English Bibles, was revealed to Moses at the burning bush, chapter 3, verse 14, chapter 6, verse 3. It is related to the Hebrew word, quote, to be, end quote, and carries with it the connotations of eternal self-sufficiency and covenant loyalty. The Israelites' understanding of God as Yahweh is greatly impacted in Exodus as God remembers his covenant obligations, chapter 2, verse 24, delivers them out of their bondage in Egypt, reveals his law, chapters 19 through 31, responds to intercessory prayer, chapter 32, verses 11 through 14, and dwells in the midst of his people in the tabernacle, chapter 40. In addition, the plagues on the Egyptians reveal God's mighty power to redeem his people with an outstretched arm, demonstrating to the people of Israel and Egypt that he is Yahweh, chapter 6, verse 6 and following, chapter 7, verse 5, and chapter 10, verse 2. Presence of God. The presence of God among his people is tangibly displayed in Exodus in several ways. God leads his people out of Egypt, appearing as a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, chapter 13, verse 21. God's presence is manifested further at Sinai, chapter 19, and in his revelation of his presence to Moses, chapter 33. In the closing chapters of Exodus, God's presence comes to reside in the tabernacle, chapter 40. And in this way, God is present with his people in a tangible sense, dwelling in the tent of meeting in the midst of his people, as they make their pilgrimage through the wilderness of Sinai, dwelling in tents themselves. Redemption. In Exodus, God liberates his enslaved people by breaking the bonds of Egyptian oppression. The idea of redemption implies salvation that comes about by paying a price. God's redemption of his people from slavery is an important theme throughout the Bible. The redemption of Israel from Egypt was to be remembered as part of the reason for the Sabbath, Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 15, and the Israelites were commanded to redeem the firstborn of their children and animals, Exodus chapter 13, verse 2. Law. It is at Mount Sinai that Israel receives the Torah, the instructions that define and detail the way God wants his people to live. Often known as the Sinai Covenant, this development fills out the promises made to Abraham. Both casuistic and apodictic laws are found in the Torah. Casuistic law is law given in a conditional form: if X, then Y. This type of law was common in the ancient Near East and can be found in other law codes such as the Code of Hammurabi. An example of this type of law is Exodus chapter 22, verse 6, quote, if a fire breaks out and spreads into thorn bushes, dot, 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 then the one who started the fire must make restitution, end quote. Apodictic law is given as categorical imperatives: thou shalt not do X. This form of law is virtually unknown in the ancient Near Eastern context outside the Torah. The Ten Commandments are expressed in this form, Exodus chapter 20, verses 2 through 17. This law code provides stability and order for the Israelite nation, emphasizing the importance of a holy lifestyle consistent with a nation living in the presence of God as, quote, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation, end quote. Chapter 19, verse 6. Significant parallels exist between the Mosaic Law Code and other ancient Near Eastern law codes, such as the Code of Hammurabi, the Ur-Nammu Code, and the Hittite Law Code. Questions raised by Exodus. The book of Exodus contains many paradoxes that become apparent as we see God working with Moses and dwelling in the midst of his people. Consider the following questions as you read Exodus. Does the fact that God blessed the midwives imply that the Bible condones lying? Exodus chapter 1, verses 15 through 21. Number 2. Why did God try to kill Moses or his son on his way back to Egypt? Exodus chapter 4. Number 3. Does God harden people's hearts? Exodus chapter 4, verse 21. Chapter 7, verse 3 and 13, chapter 9, verse 12, and chapter 10, verse 1, etc. Number 4. How do the plagues of Egypt expose the gods of Egypt? Number 5. Does God approve of slavery and polygamy? What impact does culture have on the shaping of the law? Exodus chapter 21, verses 2 through 11. Number 6. How do we understand lex talionis, the law of retaliation? Exodus chapter 21, verses 23 through 25. 7. Can God change his mind? How can God be omniscient and still allow for genuine free will on the part of humankind? Can prayer impact God's decisions? Exodus chapter 32. Number 8. How are the Sinaitic covenant and the Exodus events referred to in the rest of Scripture? Conclusion. Exodus continues the story of the Israelites who begin to develop a national identity during their time in the wilderness, transitioning from their roles as slaves of Pharaoh to that of being servants of Yahweh. Throughout the narrative and legal material in Exodus, God's presence with and concern for his people continue to be revealed in increasing depth and fullness. Getting Started with Exodus by Lauren Stauffer and Ted Hildebrandt.